He puts his fingertips together in a triangle, his voice still calm, still gentle. But there was division in our little outpost, even as we were victorious. Division between men and women. I'll say there was. They made their own army, Viola. They splintered off, not trusting men whose thoughts they could read. We tried to reason with them, but eventually they wanted war. And I'm afraid they got it. He sits up, looking at me sadly. An army of women is still an army with guns. Still an army that can defeat you. I can hear myself breathing. You killed every single one. I did not. He says, many of them died in battle, but when they saw the war was lost, they spread the word that we were their murderers, and then they killed themselves so that the remaining men would be doomed either way. I don't believe you, I say, remembering that Ben told us a different version. That's not how it happened. I was there, Viola. I remember it all far more clearly than I want to. He catches my eye. I am also the one most keen that history doesn't repeat itself. Do you understand me? I think I do understand him. And my stomach sinks, and I can't help it. I start to cry, thinking of how they brought Maddie's body back, how Mistress Coyle insisted I be the one to help her prepare the body for burial, how she wanted me to see up close the cost of trying to find the tower. Mistress Coyle, I say, fighting to control myself. Mistress Coyle wanted me to ask if we can bury her this afternoon. I've already sent word that she can, the mayor says. Everything Mistress Coyle requires is being delivered to her as we speak. I set the coffee down on a little table next to my chair. We're in a huge room, bigger than any place indoors I've ever seen except for the launch hangars of my ship. Too large for just a pair of comfortable chairs and a wooden table. The only light shines down through a round window of colored glass showing this world and its two moons. Everything else is in shadow. How are you finding her? The mayor asks. Mistress Coyle. The weight on my shoulders. The weight of Maddie being gone. The weight of Todd still out there sits so heavily I'd forgotten for a minute he was even there. What do you mean? He shrugs a little.
How is she to work with? How is she as a teacher?
I swallow. She's the best healer in Haven.
And now the best healer in New Prentice Town. He corrects. People tell me she used to be quite powerful around here. A force to be reckoned with.
I bite my lip and look back at the carpet. She couldn't save Maddie.
Well, let's forgive her for that, shall we?
His voice is low, soft, almost kind.
Nobody's perfect.
He sets down his cup.
I'm sorry about your friend,
he says again.
And I'm sorry it has taken this long for us to speak again. There's been much work to do. I look to stop the suffering on this planet, which is why your friend's death grieves me so. That's been my whole mission. The war is over, Viola. It truly is. Now is the time for healing.
I don't say anything to that.
But your mistress doesn't see it that way, does she?
He asks.
She sees me as the enemy.
In the early hours of this morning, as we dressed Maddie in her white burial clothes, she said, if he wants a war, he's got a war. We haven't even started fighting. But then when I was summoned here, she said to tell him no such thing, to ask only about the funeral. and to find out what I could.
You see me as the enemy, too, he says. And I truly wish that weren't the case. I am so disappointed that this terrible incident has made you even more suspicious of me.
I feel Maddie rising again in my chest. I feel Todd rising, too. I have to breathe through my mouth for a minute.
I know how appealing it seems that there should be sides, that you should be on her side,
he says.
I don't blame you. I haven't even asked you about your ships because I know you would lie to me. I know she would have asked you to. If I were in Mistress Coyle's position, I would do exactly the same thing. Push you to help me. Use an asset that's fallen into my lap.
She's not using me, I say quietly.
You can be so valuable to us, I remember, if you choose.
He leans forward.
Can I tell you something, Viola?
What?
I ask.
He cocks his head.
I really do wish you would call me David.
I look back down to the carpet. What is it, David?
Thank you, Viola,
he says.
It really does mean something to me.
He waits until I look up again.
I've met the council that ran Haven as was. I've met the former mayor of Haven. I've met the former police chief and the chief medical officer and the head of education. I've met everyone of any importance in this town. Some of them now work for me. Some of them don't fit into the new administration, and that's fine. There's plenty of work to be done rebuilding this city, making it ready for your people, Viola. Making it the proper paradise that they need and want and expect.
He's still looking right into my eyes. I notice how dark blue his own are, like water running over a slate.
And of all the people I've met in New Prentice Town, your Mistress Coyle is the only one who truly knows what leading is like. Leadership isn't grown, Viola. It's taken. And she may be the only person on this entire planet besides myself who has enough strength, enough will, to take it.
I keep looking at his eyes and a thought comes. His noise is still silent as the black beyond, and his face and eyes give away nothing either. But I do begin to wonder. Right there, just at the back of my thinking. Is he afraid of her?
Why do you think I had you taken to her for your gunshot wound?
He asks. She's the best healer, you said it yourself.
Yes, but she's far from the only one. Bandages and medicine do most of the work. Mistress Coyle just applies them, especially skillfully.
My hand goes unconsciously to my front scar. It's not just that.
It is not, you're correct.
He leans even farther forward.
I want her on my side, Viola. I need her on my side if I'm going to make this new society any kind of success. If we worked together, Mistress Coyle and I...
He leans back.
Well... What a world we could make.
You locked her up.
But I wasn't going to keep her locked up. The borders between men and women had become blurred, and the reintroduction of those borders is a slow and painful process. The formation of mutual trust takes time, but the important thing to remember is, as I've said, the war is over, Viola. It truly is. I want no more fighting. No more bloodshed.
For something to do, I pick up the cooling cup of coffee. I put it to my lips, but I don't drink it. Is Todd okay? I ask, not looking at him.
Happy and healthy and working in the sun,
the mayor says. Can I see him? He's silent, as if he's considering it.
Will you do something for me?
He asks. What?
Another idea begins to form in my head.
You want me to spy on her for you?
No, he says. Not spying, not at all. I just want your help in convincing her that I'm not the tyrant she thinks. That history isn't as she knows it, that if we work together, we can make this place into the home we both wanted when our people left Old World all those many years ago. I am not her enemy. And I am not yours.
He seems so sincere. He really does.
I'm asking for your help,
he says. You're in complete control, I say. You don't need my help.
I do,
he says insistently.
You've grown closer to her than I ever possibly could.
Have I? I think.
This is the girl, I remember. I also know that she drugged you that first night so you would fall asleep before you told me anything.
I sip my cold coffee. Wouldn't you have done the same?
He smiles. So you agree we're not that different, she and I?
How can I trust you?
How can you trust her if she drugged you?
She saved my life.
After I delivered you to her.
She's not keeping me locked up in the House of Healing.
You came here unchaperoned, didn't you? The restrictions are being lessened this very day.
She's training me as a healer.
And who are all those other healers she's been meeting with?
He folds his fingers back into a tent.
What are they up to, do you suppose?
I look down into the coffee cup and swallow, wondering how he knows.
And what do they have planned for you?
He asks. I still don't look at him. He stands.
Come with me, please.
He leads me out of the huge room and across the short lobby at the front of the cathedral. The doors are wide open onto the town square. The army is doing marching exercises out there, and the pound, pound, pound of their feet pours in, and the roar of the men who no longer have the cure floods in right behind it. I wince a little.
Look there, says the mayor.
Past the army, in the center of the square, some men are assembling a small platform of plain wood, a bent pole up on the top. What's that?
It's where Sergeant Hammer is going to be hanged tomorrow afternoon for his terrible, terrible crime.
The memory of Maddie, of her lifeless eyes, rises in my chest again. I have to press my hand to my mouth to hold it back.
I spared the old mayor of this town,
he says.
But I will not spare one of my most loyal and long-standing sergeants.
He looks at me.
Do you honestly think I would go to such lengths just to please one girl who has information I could use? Do you honestly think I would go to that much trouble when, as you say, I'm in complete control?
Why are you doing it, then? I ask.
Because he broke the law. Because this is a civilized world and acts of barbarity will not be tolerated. Because the war is over.
He turns to me.
I would very much like you to convince Mistress Coyle of that.
He steps closer.
Will you do that? Will you at least tell her the things I'm doing to remedy this tragic situation?
I look down at my feet. My mind is whirling, spinning like a meteor. The things he says could be true. But Maddie is dead. And it's my fault. And Todd's still gone. What do I do? What do I do.
Will you, Viola?
At least, I think, it's information to give to Mistress Coyle. I swallow. I'll try. He smiles again.
Wonderful.
He touches me gently on the arm.
Run along back now. They'll be needing you for the funeral service.
I nod and step out onto the front steps and away from him, moving into the square a little bit, the roar of it all beating down on me as hard as the sun. I stop and try to catch the breath that seems to have run away from me.
Viola.
He's still watching me. Watching me from the steps of his house, the cathedral.
Why don't you have dinner with me here tomorrow night?
He grins, seeing how I try to hide how much I don't want to come.
Todd will be there, of course,
he says. I open my eyes wide. Another wave rises from my chest, bringing the tears again and surprising me so much I hiccup. Really?
Really,
he says. You mean it?
I mean it,
he says, and then he opens his arms to me for an embrace.
11. Saved your life. We gotta number 'em, Davy says, getting out a heavy canvas bag that's been left in the monastery storeroom and dropping it loudly to the grass. That's our new job. It's the morning after the mayor wished me a late happy birthday. The morning after I vowed I'd find her. But ain't nothing's changed. Number 'em, I ask, looking out at the spackle, still staring back at us in the silence that don't make no sense. Surely the cure should have worn off by now. Why? Don't you never listen to Pa? Davy says, getting out some of the tools. Everyone's got to know their place. Besides, we got to keep track of the animals somehow. They ain't animals, Davy. I say, not too heated, 'cause we've had this fight before a couple times. They're just aliens. Whatever, pig piss, he says, and pulls out a pair of bolt cutters from the bag, setting them on the grass. He reaches in the bag again. Take these, he says, holding out a handful of metal bands, strapped together with a longer one. I take them from him. Then I recognize what I'm holding. We're not, I say. Oh, yes, we are. He holds up another tool, which I also recognize. It's how we mark sheep back in Prentistown. You take the tool Davy's holding, and you wrap a metal band around a sheep's leg. The tool bolts the ends together tight. Too tight. So tight it cuts into the skin. So tight it starts an infection. But the metal's coated with a medicine to fight it, so what happens is that the infected skin starts to heal around the band, grow into it, replacing that bit of skin with the metal band itself. I look up again at the spackle looking back at us. 'Cause the catch is, it don't heal if you take it off. The sheep will bleed to death if you do. You put on a band, and it's yours till the sheep dies. There ain't no going back from it. Then all you gotta do is think of 'em as sheep, Davy says, standing up with the bolting tool and looking out over the spackle. Line up! We'll do one field at a time, he shouts, gesturing at the spackle with the bolting tool in one hand and the pistol in the other. The soldiers on the stone walls keep their rifles pointed into the herd. Once you get your number, you stay in that field, and you don't leave it, understand? And they seem to understand. That's the thing. They understand way more than a sheep would. I look at the packet of metal bands I'm holding. Davy, this is... Just get a move on, pig piss, he says impatiently. We're meant to get through 200 today. I swallow. The first spackle in line is watching the metal bands as well. I think it's female, 'cause sometimes you can tell by the color of the lichen they've got growing for their clothes. She's shorter than usual, too, for a spackle, my height or less. And I'm thinking, if I don't do it, if I'm not the one who does this, then they'll just get someone else who won't care if it hurts. Better they have me who'll treat them right. Better than just Davy on his own. Right? Right? Just wrap the effing band around its arm or we'll be here all effing morning, Davy says. I gesture for her to hold out her arm. She does, staring at my eyes, not blinking. I swallow again. I unwrap the packet of bands and peel off the one marked 0001. She's still staring, still not blinking. I take hold of her outstretched hand. The flesh is warm, warmer than I expected. They look so white and cold. I wrap the band round her wrist. I can feel her pulse beating under my fingertips. She still looks into my eyes. I'm sorry, I whisper. Davy steps up, takes the loose ends of the band and the bolting tool, gives it a twist so sharp and hard the spackle lets out a pained hiss, and then he slams the bolting tool together, locking the metal strip into her wrist, making her 0001 forever and ever. She bleeds from under the band. 0001 bleeds red, which I already knew. Holding her wrist with her other hand, she moves away from us, still staring, still unblinking, silent as a curse. None of them fight. They just line up and stare and stare and stare. Once in a while, they make their clicking sounds to one another, but no noise, no struggles, no resistance, which makes Davy angrier and angrier. Damn things, he says, holding the twist for a second before he bolts it off just to see how long he can make them hiss, and a second or two longer than that. How'd you like that, huh? He yells at a spackle as it walks away, holding its wrist, staring back at us. 0038 is next in line. It's a tall one, probably male, skinny as anything, and getting skinnier because even a fool can see that the fodder we put out every morning ain't enough for 1,500 spackle. Put the band round its neck, Davy says. What? I say, my eyes widening. No! Put it around its effing neck! I'm not... He lunges forward suddenly, clonking me on the head with a bolting tool and ripping the metal bands out of my hand. I fall to one knee, clutching at my skull, and the pain keeps me from looking up for a few seconds. And when I do, it's too late. Davy's got the spackle kneeling in front of him, the 0038 band twisted tight around its neck, and is using the bolting tool to twist it tighter. The soldiers on top of the wall are laughing, and the spackle's gasping for air, clawing at the band with its fingers, blood coming from around its neck. Stop it! I shout, struggling to get to my feet. But Davy slams the bolting tool shut, and the spackle tumbles over into the grass, making loud gagging sounds, its head starting to turn a cruel-looking pink. Davy stands above it, not moving, just watching it choke to death. I see the bolt cutters Davy set on the grass, and I stumble to get 'em, grabbing 'em and rushing back over to 0038. Davy tries to stop me, but I swing the bolt cutters at him, and he jumps back, and I kneel beside 0038 and try to get to the metal band, but Davy's twisted it so tight, and the spackle's thrashing so much from suffocating that I finally have to force him down with one fist. I cut the band free. It flies off in a mess of blood and skin. The spackle takes in a rake of air so loud it hurts your ears, and I lean back away from him, bolt cutter still in my hand. And as I watch the spackle struggle to breathe again and possibly fail, and as Davy hovers behind me, bolting tool in his hand, I realize how much clicking I'm hearing running through the spackle, and it's now, of all times, of all moments, of all reasons, it's right now they decide to attack. The first punch glances lightly off the crown of my head. They're thin, and they're light, so there's not much weight behind the punch, but there are 1,500 of them. And they come in a wave, so thick it's like being plunged underwater. More fists, more punching, scratches across my face and the back of my neck, and I'm knocked farther to the ground, and the weight of them presses down on me, grabbing at my arms and legs, grabbing at my clothes and hair. And I'm calling out and yelling, and one of them's taking the bolt cutters from my hand and swings it hard into my elbow, and the pain of it is more than I can actually stand. And my only thought, my only stupid thought is, why are they attacking me? I tried to save 0038. But they know. They know. They know I'm a killer. Davy cries out as I hear the first gunshots from the top of the stone walls. More punches and more scratches, but more gunshots too. And the spackles start to scatter, which is something I can hear more than see because of the pain radiating up from my elbow. And there's still one on top of me, scratching at me from behind, as I lie face down on the grass and I manage to turn myself over. And though the guns are still firing and the smell of cordite is filling the air and spackle are running and running, this one stays on me, scratching and slapping away. And the same second I realize it's 0001, the first one in the line, the first one I touched, there's a bang, and she spins and falls to the grass beside me, dead. Davy standing over me with his pistol, smoke still coming from its barrel. His nose and lip are bleeding. He's got as many scratches as I do, and he's leaning heavily to one side. But he's smiling. Saved your life, didn't I? The firing of rifles carries on. The spackle keep running, but there's nowhere to go. They fall. And they fall and they fall. I look down at my elbow. I think my arm's broke. I think my leg's broke, Davy says. But you go back to Pa. Tell him what's happened. Tell him I saved your life. Davy's not looking at me, still raising his pistol, firing it, keeping his weight all weird on his legs. Davy, go, he says, and there's a grim kind of joy coming from him. I got me a job to finish here. He fires the gun again. Another spackle falls. They're falling all over the place. I take a step toward the gate, and another, and then I'm running. My arm throbs with every step, but Angharad says, Boy Colt, when I get to her and snuffles my face with a wet nose. She kneels down so I can flop forward onto her saddle. When she takes off down the road, she waits till I'm upright before she hits the fastest gallop I ever seen from her. I'm hanging onto her mane with one hand, my hurt arm curled under me, and I'm trying not to throw up from the pain. I look up now and then to see women, quiet and distant, watch me ride past from their windows. I see men watch the horse run by, looking at my face all bloody and injured. And I wonder who they think they're seeing. Are they seeing one of them? Or are they seeing their enemy? Who do they think I am? I close my eyes, but I nearly lose my balance, so I open them again. Angharad takes me down the road on the side of the cathedral, her shoes striking sparks on the cobbles as she turns the corner to go round to the entrance. The army's in the square doing marching exercises. Most of them still ain't got noise, but the pounding of their feet is loud enough to bend the air. I wince at it all and look up to where we're going, to the front door of the cathedral. And my noise gives such a shock, Angharad stops up short, scrabbling on the cobbles, flanks foaming from getting me here so fast. I barely notice. My heart has stopped beating. I've stopped breathing. 'Cause there she is. In front of my eyes, walking up the steps of the cathedral, there she is. And my heart jump-starts again. And my noise is ready to scream her name, and my pain is disappearing. 'Cause she's alive. She's alive! But then I'm seeing more. I'm seeing her walking up the steps, toward Mayor Prentice, into his open arms. And he's embracing her. And she's letting him. And all I can think, all I can say, is, Viola?
Part 3. War is over. 12. Betrayal. Mayor Prentice stands there. The leader of this town, this world. Arms wide. As if this is the price. Do I pay it? It's just one hug, I think. Isn't it? One hug to see Todd. I step forward, just one hug, and he puts his arms around me. I try not to go rigid at his touch. I never told you, he says into my ear. We found your ship in the swamp as we marched here. We found your parents. I let out a little gasp of tears and try to swallow them back. We gave them a decent burial.
I'm so sorry, Viola. I know how lonely you must be, and nothing would please me more than if one day, maybe, you could consider me as your... There's a sudden sound above the roar. One bit of noise flying higher than the rest, clear as an arrow. An arrow fired directly at me. Viola! It screams, knocking the words right out of the mayor's mouth. I step back from his embrace, his arms falling away. I turn. And there, in the afternoon sunshine, in the square, on the back of a horse not 10 yards away, there he is. It's him. It's him. Todd! I yell, and I'm already running. He's standing where he slid off the horse, holding his arm at a bad angle, and I hear, Viola! Roaring through his noise, but I can also hear the pain in his arm and confusion lacing through everything, but my own mind is racing too fast and my heart is pounding too loud for me to hear any of it clearly. Todd! I yell again, and I reach him, and his noise opens even farther and wraps around me like a blanket, and I'm grabbing him to me like I'll never let him go. And he calls out in pain, but his other arm is grabbing me back, it's grabbing me back, it's grabbing me back. I thought you were dead, he's saying, his breath on my neck. I thought you were dead. Todd, I say, and I'm crying, and the only thing I can say is his name. Todd. He gasps sharply again, and the pain flashes so loud in his noise, I'm almost blinded by it. Your arm, I say, pulling back. Broken, he pants. Broken by...
Todd?
The mayor says, right behind us, staring hard into him.
You're back early.
My arm, Todd says.
The spackle.
The spackle, I say.
That looks bad, Todd,
the mayor says, talking over us.
We need to get you healed right away.
He can come to Mistress Coyle.
Viola,
the mayor says, and I hear Todd think,
Viola?
Wondering all over how the mayor speaks to me like this.
Your house of healing is too far for Todd to walk with an injury this bad.
I'll come with you, I say. I'm training as an apprentice.
You're what?
Todd says. His pain is wailing like a siren, but he's still looking back and forth between me and the mayor.
What's going on?
How do you know?
I'll explain everything,
the mayor says, taking Todd's free arm.
After we get you healed.
He turns to me.
The invitation is still on for tomorrow. You have a funeral to get to just now.
Funeral? Todd says. What funeral?
Tomorrow,
the mayor says to me again firmly, pulling Todd away. Wait, I say. Viola, Todd shouts, jerking away from the mayor's grasp, but the movement shakes his broken arm and he falls to one knee with the pain of it. Pain so sharp, so loud and clear in his noise that soldiers from the army stop to hear it. I jump forward to help, but the mayor holds out a hand to stop me.
Go,
he says, and it's not a voice that's asking for discussion.
I'll help Todd. You go to your funeral and mourn your friend. You'll see Todd tomorrow night, good as new.
Viola? Todd's noise says again, choking back a weep from pain so heavy now I don't think he can speak. Tomorrow, Todd, I say loudly, trying to get through his noise. I'll see you tomorrow.
Viola!
He calls again, but the mayor is already leading him away. You promised! I call after them. Remember that you promised! The mayor gives me a smile.
Remember, you promised too.
Did I? I think. And then I'm watching them go, so fast it's like it didn't even happen. But Todd... Todd is alive. I have to bend down close to the ground for a minute and just let it be true.
And with burdened hearts, we commit you to the earth.
Here. Mistress Coyle takes my hand after the priestess finishes speaking and puts some loose dirt into it. We sprinkle it over the coffin.
I stare at the dirt in my hand.
Why?
So that she's been buried by the efforts of all of us.
She directs me to a place with her in the line of healers gathering by the graveside. We pass by the hole one by one, each of us throwing our handful of dry soil onto the wooden box where Maddie now rests. Everyone stands as far away from me as they can. No one but Mistress Coyle will even speak to me. They blame me. I blame me, too. There are more than 50 women here. Healers, apprentices, patients. Soldiers are spread out in a circle around us, more than you'd think necessary for a funeral. Men, including Maddie's father, are kept separate on the other side of the grave. Maddie's father's weeping noise is the saddest thing I think I've ever heard. And in the middle of everything, I can only feel even more guilty because what I'm mostly thinking about is Todd. Now that I'm away from it, I can see the confusion in his noise more clearly. See how it must have looked to find me in the arms of the mayor, how friendly we must have seemed together. Even though I can explain it all, I still feel ashamed. And then he was gone. I throw my dirt on Maddie's coffin. Then Mistress Coyle takes me by the arm.
We need to talk. He wants to work with me,
Mistress Coyle says, over a cup of tea in my small bedroom. He says he admires you.
Her eyebrows raise. Does he now?
I know, I say. I know how it sounds, but maybe if you heard him...
Oh, I think I've heard enough from our president to last me a good while.
I lean back on my bed. But he could have, I don't know, forced me to tell him about the ships, and he's not forcing me to do anything. I look away. He's even letting me see my friend tomorrow.
You're Todd?
I nod. Her expression is solid as stone.
And I suppose that makes you grateful to him, does it?
No, I say, rubbing my face with my hands. I saw what his army did as they marched. I saw it with my own two eyes. There's a long silence.
But,
Mistress Coyle finally says. I don't look at her. But he's hanging the man who shot Maddie. He's executing him tomorrow. She makes a dismissive sound with her lips.
What's one more killing to a man like him? What's one more life to take? Typical that he should think that solves the problem.
He seemed genuinely sorry. She looks at me sideways.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure that's exactly how he seemed.
She lowers her voice.
He's the president of lies, my girl. He will lie so well you'll believe it's the truth. The devil tells the best stories, didn't your mama teach you that?
He doesn't think he's the devil, I say. He thinks he's just a soldier who won a war. She looks at me carefully.
Appeasement, she says. That's what it's called. Appeasement. It's a slippery slope.
What does it mean?
It means you want to work with the enemy. It means you'd rather join him than beat him. And it's a surefire way to stay beaten.
I don't want that, I yell. I just want this all to stop. I want this to be a home for all the people on their way, the home that we were all looking forward to. I want there to be peace and happiness. My voice starts to thicken. I don't want anyone else to die. She sets down her teacup, puts her hands on her knees, and looks hard at me.
Are you sure that's what you want?
She says.
Or is it your boy you'll do anything for?
And I wonder for a minute if she can read my mind. Because yes, I want to see Todd. I want to explain to him.
Clearly your loyalty doesn't lie with us, Mistress Coyle says. After your little stunt with Maddie, there are those of us who aren't so sure you're not more of a danger than an asset.
Asset, I think. She sighs, long and hard.
For the record,
she says. I don't blame you for Maddie's death. She was old enough to make her own decisions, and if she chose to help you, well then. She runs her fingers across her forehead. I see so much of myself in you, Viola, even when I'd rather not. She stands to leave. So please know, I don't blame you. Whatever happens. What do you mean, whatever happens? But she doesn't say anything more. That night, they have something called a wake, where everyone at the House of Healing drinks lots of weak beer and sings songs that Maddie liked and tells stories about her. There are tears, including my own. And they're not happy tears, but they're not as sad as they could be. And I'm going to see Todd again tomorrow. And that's as close as I can feel to all right about anything just now. I wander around the House of Healing, around the other healers and apprentices and patients talking to one another. None of them will talk to me. I see Corinne sitting by herself in a chair by the window, looking especially stormy. She's refused to speak to anyone since Maddie's death, even declining to say something over the grave. You'd have to have been sitting right next to her to see how many tear tracks were on her cheeks. It must be the beer working in me, but she looks so upset. I go over and sit down next to her. I'm sorry, I start to say, but she stands up before I can even finish and walks away, leaving me there. Mistress Coyle comes over, two glasses of beer in her hands. She hands one to me. We both watch Corinne as she leaves the room. Don't be too bothered about her, Mistress Coyle says, sitting down. She's always hated me. She hasn't. She's just had a hard time of it, that's all. How hard? It's her place to tell you, not mine. Drink up. I take a drink. It's sweet and weedy tasting, the bubbles sharp against the roof of my mouth, but not in a bad way. We sit and drink for a minute or two. Have you ever seen an ocean, Viola? Mistress Coyle asks. I cough away a little of the beer. An ocean? There's oceans on New World, she says. Big as anything. I was born on a settler ship, I say. But I saw them from orbit as we flew in on the scout. Ah, well, then you've never stood on a beach as the waves came crashing in. The water stretching out from you until it's beyond sight. Moving and blue and alive and so much bigger than even the black beyond seems, because the ocean hides what it contains. She shakes her head in a happy way. If you ever want to see how small you are in the plan of God, just stand at the edge of an ocean. I've only ever been to a river. She puffs out her bottom lip. Regarding me. This river goes to the ocean, you know. It's not even all that far. 2 days on horseback at most. A long morning in a fission car, though the road's not that great. There's a road? Not much left of it anymore. Is there something there? Used to be my home, she says, shifting in her chair. When we first landed, going on 23 years ago now. Meant to be a fishing settlement, boats and everything. In 100 years' time, it might have even been a port.
What happened?
What happened all over this planet? All our grand plans just sort of falling by the wayside in the first couple of years in the face of difficulty. It was harder to start a new civilization than we thought. You have to crawl before you can walk.
She takes a sip of her beer.
And then sometimes you go back to crawling.
She smiles to herself.
Probably for the best, though. Turns out New World's oceans aren't really for fishing.
Why not?
Oh, the fish are the size of your boat, and they swim up alongside and look you in the eye and tell you how they're going to eat you.
She laughs a little.
And then they eat you. I laugh a little, too. And then I remember all that's happened. She looks at me again, catching my eye. It's beautiful, though, the ocean. Like nothing you've ever seen. You miss it. I drink the last of my beer. To see the ocean once is to learn how to miss it, she says, taking my glass. Let me get you another. That night, I dream. I dream of oceans and of fish that will eat me. I dream of armies that swim by and of Mistress Coyle leading them. I dream of Maddie taking my hand and holding me up from the water. I dream of thunder making a single loud boom that almost breaks the sky in two. Maddie smiles when I jump at the sound of it. I'm going to see him, I tell her. She glances over my shoulder and says, There he is. I turn to look. I wake, but the sun's all wrong. I sit up, my head feeling like it's a boulder, and I have to close my eyes to make everything stop spinning. Is this what a hangover feels like? I say out loud. There was no alcohol in that beer, Corinne says. I snap my eyes open, which is a mistake, as black spots form everywhere in my vision. What are you doing here? Waiting for you to wake up so the president's men can take you. What? I say as she stands. What's going on? She drugged you. Jeffers in your beer, plus bandy root to disguise the taste. She left you this. She holds out a small piece of paper. You're to destroy it after you read it. I take the paper. It's a note from Mistress Coyle. Forgive me, my girl, it says, but the president is wrong. The war is not over. Keep to the side of right. Keep gathering information. Keep leading him astray. You'll be contacted. They blew up a storefront and left in the confusion, Corinne says. They did what? My voice starts to rise. Corinne, what's going on? But she's not even looking at me. I told them they were abandoning their sacred trust, that nothing was more important than saving lives. Who else is here? Just you and me, she says. And the soldiers waiting outside to take you to your president. She looks down at her shoes, and for the first time I notice the anger, the rage burning off her. I expect I'll be interrogated by someone less handsome. Corinne, you'll have to start calling me Mistress Wyatt now, she says, turning toward the door. That is, in the unlikely event that both of us get back here alive. They're gone? I say, still not believing it. Corinne just glares at me, waiting for me to rise. They're gone. She left me here alone with Corinne. She left me here. To go off and start a war.
13. Splinters. Fission fuel, sir. Soaked into clay powder to make a paste. I know how to make a bush bomb, Corporal Parker, says the mayor, surveying the damage from his saddle. What I do not know is how a group of unarmed women managed to plant one in full view of soldiers under your command. We see Corporal Parker swallow, actually see it move in his throat. He's not a man from Old Prentistown, so he must have been picked up along the way. You go where the power is, Ivan said. But what about when the power wants answers you ain't got?
It may not have just been women, sir, Parker says. People are talking about something called...
Look at this pig piss, Davy says to me. He's ridden Deadfall/Acorn over to a tree trunk near where we've stopped across the road from the blown-out storefront.
I chirrup to Angharad,
using my one good hand to tap the reins. She picks her feet lightly over the bits of wood and plaster and glass and foodstuffs that are scattered everywhere, like the store finally let go of a sneeze it was holding in. We get over to Davy, who's pointing to a bunch of light-colored splinters sticking straight out of the tree trunk. "Explosion so big it ran 'em straight into the tree," he says. "Those bitches!" "It was late at night," I say, readjusting my arm in the sling. "They didn't hurt no one." "Bitches," Davy repeats, shaking his head. "You'll turn in your supply of cure, Corporal," we hear the mayor say loud enough so Corporal Parker's men hear the punishment too. "All of you will. Privacy is a privilege for those who've earned it." The mayor ignores Corporal Parker's mumbled, "Yes, sir," and turns to have a short, quiet word with Mr. O'Hare and Mr. Morgan, who then ride off in different directions. The mayor comes over to us next, not saying nothing, face frowning like a slap. Morpeth stares viciously at our mouths, too.
"Submit,"
says his noise.
"Submit, submit."
Deadfall and Angharad both lower their heads and step back. All horses are a little bit crazy. "Want me to go hunting for him, Pa?" Davy says. "The bitches who did this?" "Mind your language," the mayor says. "You both have work to be getting on with." Davy gives me a sideways glance and holds out his left leg. The whole bottom half is covered in a cast. "Pa," he says, "if you ain't noticed, I can barely walk and pig piss here's in a sling and..." He don't even finish the sentence before there's that whoosh of sound, flying from the mayor faster than thought, like a bullet made of noise. Davy flinches back in his saddle, yanking the reins so hard Deadfall rears up, nearly dumping Davy to the ground. Davy recovers, breathing heavy, eyes unfocused. "What the hell is that?"
"Does this look like a day you can take off?"
the mayor says, indicating all the wreckage of the store stretched around us. The husk of the building still smoking in some parts. Blown up. I've been hiding it in my noise, doing my best to keep it down. But it's there, hidden away, bubbling below the surface. The thought of a bridge that blew up once. I look back to see the mayor staring at me so hard, I'm blurting it out before I can barely think. "It wasn't her," I say. "I'm sure it wasn't." He keeps on staring. "I never thought it might be, Todd." Fixing my arm didn't take very long yesterday, once he dragged me across the square to a clinic, where men in white coats set it and gave me two injections of bone mending that hurt more than the break. But by then, he was already gone, promising I'd see Viola the next night. Tonight. Tonight. And already out of reach of a million and one askins about how he came to be embracing her and calling her all friendly-like by her first name, and how she's working as a doctor or something, and how she had to leave to go to a funeral, and how my heart just exploded from my chest when I saw her, and how it hurt all over again when she left. And then off she went somehow, to a life of her own, already being lived out there somewhere without me in it. And then there was just me and my arm going back to the cathedral with the painkillers making me so sleepy, I barely had time to fall on my mattress before blinking right out. I didn't wake when Mayor Ledger came back in with his gray day of rubbish collecting noise complaints. I didn't wake when dinner came and Mayor Ledger ate both servings. I didn't wake when we were locked inside for the night, kerthunk. But I surely did wake when a boom shook the entire city. And even as I sat up in the darkness and felt the queasy of the painkillers in my stomach, even without knowing what the boom was, or where it had come from, or what it meant, even then I knew things had changed again, that the world had suddenly become different one more time. And sure enough, out we came with the mayor and his men at first light, injuries or no, straight to the bomb site. I look at him on Morpeth. The morning sun shining behind him, casting his shadow over everything. "Will I still see her tonight?" I ask. There's a long, quiet moment where he just stares. "Mr. President," calls Corporal Parker as his men take away a long plank of wood that was blown against another tree. Something's been drawn on the trunk underneath. Even with not knowing how to... well, even with not knowing much... I can tell what it is. A single letter, smeared on the trunk in blue. A, it says. Just the letter A. I can't believe he's making us effing go back there one day after we fought off the attack. Davy grumbles as we make our way down the long road to the monastery. I can't believe it neither, frankly. Davy can barely walk, and even with the bone mending doing its work on my arm, it'll be a couple of days before everything's back to normal. I can start to bend it already, but I sure as hell can't fight off a spackle army with it. Did you tell him I saved your life? Davy asks, looking both angry and shy. Didn't you tell him? I say. Davy's mouth flattens, pulling his sad little mustache fluff even thinner. He don't believe me when I tell him stuff like that. I sigh. I told him. He saw it in my noise anyway. We ride in silence for a bit before Davy finally says, "Did he say anything?" I hesitate. He said, "Good for him."
That's all?
He said it was good for me, too. Davy bites his lip.
That's it?
That's it. I see. He don't say no more, just jigs deadfall along a bit faster. Even though it was only one building that got blown up in the night, the whole city looks different as we ride. The patrols of soldiers are suddenly larger, and there's more of them marching up and down the roads and side streets, so fast it's like they're running. There are soldiers on rooftops now, too, here and there, holding rifles, watching, watching, watching. The only non-soldier men out are hustling as fast as they can from place to place, staying out of the way, not looking up. I ain't seen no women this morning, not one, not her. What was she doing with him? Is she lying to him? Is he believing her? Does she have something to do with the explosion? Did who have something to do with it? Davy asks. Shut up. Make me, he says. But his heart ain't in it. We ride past a group of soldiers escorting a beat-up-looking man with his wrists bound. I press my slinged arm closer to my chest, and we keep on riding. The morning sun's high in the sky by the time we pass the hill with the metal tower and come round the final bend of the monastery. Ain't no putting off getting there any longer. What happened after I left? I say.
We beat him,
Davy says, huffing a little with the rising pain in his leg, pain I can see in his noise.
We beat him back good and proper.
Something lands on Angharad's mane.
I brush it away, and something else lands on my arm. I look up.
What the hell?
Davy says. It's snowing. I only ever seen snow once in my whole life, back when I was too young to really know that I'd hardly never see it again. Flakes of white fall through the trees and onto the road, catching on our clothes and hair. It's a silent fall, and it's weird how it makes everything else seem quiet too, like it's trying to tell you a secret. A terrible, terrible secret. But the sun is blazing. And this ain't snow.
Ash!
Davy spits when a flake lands near his mouth.
They're burning the bodies!
They're burning the bodies. The men are still on the tops of the stone walls with their rifles, making the spackle that lived pile up the bodies of the ones that died. The burning pile is huge. Taller than the tallest living spackle, and more bodies are being brought to it by spackle with their heads down and their mouths shut. I watch a body get thrown up to the top of the pile. It lands askew and tumbles down the side, rolling over other bodies, through the flames, till it reaches the mud below and comes to a stop, facing straight up, holes in its chest, blood dried on its wounds. A dead-eyed spackle face up in a campsite. A spackle with a knife in its chest. I breathe a heavy breath and I look away. Apart from some of the clicking, the living spackle still ain't got no noise. No sounds of mourning, nor anger, nor nothing at all about the mess they're having to clean up. It's like someone cut out their tongues. Ivan's there waiting for us, rifle in the crook of his arm. He's quieter this morning, and his face ain't happy.
You're to be a carrying on with the numbers,
he says, kicking over the bag with the numbering bands and tools.
Though, there's less to do now.
How many'd we get? Davy says, smiling. Ivan shrugs, annoyed.
300? 350? Can't say for sure.
I feel another greasy twist in my stomach at that, but Davy's grin gets even higher.
That's hot stuff right there.
I'm to give you this,
Ivan says, holding out the rifle to me.
You're arming him?
Davy says, his noise rising right up.
President's orders,
Ivan snaps. He's still holding out the rifle.
You're to give it to the night watch when you leave. It's only for your protection while you're in here.
He looks at me, frowning.
The president says to tell you he knows you'll do the right thing.
I'm just staring at the rifle.
I don't effing believe this,
Davy says under his breath and shaking his head. I know how to use a rifle. Ben and Killian taught me how to use one so I didn't blow my own head off, how to hunt safely with it, how to use it only when necessary. The right thing. I look up. Most of the spackle are back and away in the far fields, as far as they can get from the entrance. The rest are dragging broken and torn bodies to the fire that's burning in the middle of the next field over. But the ones that can see me are watching me. And they're watching me watch the rifle. They ain't thinking nothing I can hear. So who knows what they're planning? I take the rifle. It don't mean nothing. I won't use it. I just take it. Ivan turns and walks back to the gate to leave, and as he goes, I notice it.
A low buzz,
just barely beyond hearing, but there, and growing. No wonder he looked so pissed off. The mayor took away his cure, too. We spend the rest of the morning shoveling out the fodder, refilling the troughs, and putting lime on the bogs. Me one-handed, Davy one-legged, but taking more time than even that would allow for, 'cause brag though he may, I don't think Davy wants to get back to the numbering just yet either. We may both have guns now, but touching an enemy that almost killed you, well, that takes a bit of leading up to. Morning turns to early afternoon. For the first time, instead of taking both our lunches for himself, Davy throws a sandwich at me, hitting me in the chest with it. So we eat and watch the spackle watching us. Watch the pile of bodies burn. Watch the 1,150 spackle left over from the attack that went wrong, wrong, wrong. They're gathered round the edges of the fields we opened up and along the wall of the monastery, as far from us and from the burning pile as they can be. The bodies should go in a swamp, I say, eating my sandwich with one tired arm. That's what spackle bodies are for. You put them in water and then fire's good enough for them, Davy says, leaning against the bag of numbering tools. Yeah, but there's no buts here, pig piss. He frowns. And what are you moaning for their sakes anyway? All your blessed kindness didn't stop them from trying to rip your arm off, now did it? He's right, but I don't say nothing to that. Just keep on watching them, feeling the rifle at my back. I could take it. I could shoot Davy. I could run from here. You'd be dead before you got to the gate, Davy mumbles, looking at his sandwich. And so would your precious girl. I don't say nothing of that, neither. Just finish my lunch. Every pile of food is out. Every trough has been refilled. Every bog has been limed up. There ain't nothing left to do except the thing we gotta do. Davy sits up from where he was leaning against the bag,